Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
This is our last session of our seminar, Seeing Krishna from Neophyte to Premi. Now, once again, just to give me an idea, how many of you are here for this seminar for the first time? Raise your hands, please. Okay, so. We want to make you enthusiastic about the possibilities of samadhi. We were discussing that last night, or yesterday afternoon. How samadhi is not what you think it is, in the highest sense. The highest sense of samadhi means that wherever you look, you're seeing things that remind you of Krishna. When you see a tree, you think the body of the tree is Krishna's material energy, and the soul of the tree is Krishna's spiritual energy. Naturally, you start to remember Krishna. The energy reminds you of the energetic source. This takes practice. Every day, you can begin your samadhi of seeing things in relation to Krishna. As we discussed yesterday, we have these misconceptions in our mind that samadhi, in its highest meaning, is when you're alone on the top of a mountain and no thoughts are there, no desires are there. You're perfectly still physically. Many people think that is the highest meaning of samadhi, when actually, it is not high at all. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is teaching everyone. He's teaching Arjuna in between two opposing armies on the battlefield. Lord Krishna is teaching him the highest samadhi. Arjuna was not a brahmana. He was not a sannyasi. He was a warrior and a householder. Yet Krishna is teaching him about samadhi. Where? In the Himalayas? No. On the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Why is Krishna doing that? Just to take away all your excuses that you can't do it. Otherwise you would say, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, he's only speaking to sadhus. He's only speaking to sannyasis or brahmanas. We are not like that. We are practical persons. We have our worldly obligations. So, therefore we cannot apply Lord Krishna's teachings. Krishna, being omniscient, knows all the possible excuses you can come up with. Therefore, he travels from universe to universe with Arjuna, displaying this lila of speaking Bhagavad Gita. And Vyasadeva has recorded it. We've been discussing how simply by drinking water and thinking Krishna is the taste, you are seeing Krishna. By looking at the light of the sun and the moon and thinking, this is Krishna, you are seeing Krishna. We've been stressing seeing Krishna as he wants to be seen. That is personalism. You take Krishna's instructions how to see him, and then you see him in that way. Don't impose your conceptions about how to see Krishna on Krishna. He's already given you the process for how to see him, for how to attain the highest samadhi. And what does Lord Krishna say at the end of the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Yogi nama bisarvesham madgate nantaratmana shatavan bhajate yama so yukta tamomata. Of all the yogis, the best one is the one who's always absorbed in my transcendental-loving service. To be absorbed always in Krishna's transcendental-loving service means you're always thinking how to engage everything in Krishna's service. Just like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, Manasa deho geho yogi chumo apiluntuya pade nanda kishore. O youthful son of Maharaj Nanda, whatever I have, mind, body, home, it all belongs to you. This is samadhi. Whatever abilities you have, whatever energy you have, intellect, words, wealth, you fully engage it in Krishna's service. And you're always thinking about that. That thinking, always, how to use everything in Krishna's service, is samadhi. But there's some kind of misconception that a yogi on top of a mountain doing pranayama, that's much higher. No, this is the mystery of bhakti. The whole point of love is to do what the beloved wants. The bhakti yogi does not turn his back on the world as false. No, he or she always seeks to use the world in Krishna's service. You see potential for serving Krishna everywhere. That is samadhi. Once Srila Prabhupada explained to the verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Ataiva Santa Bhakti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakaliya Santa. Everyone wants peace. The karmic workers want peace. Those lusty for liberation, relief from material existence, they want peace. The yogis, mystic yogis, they want peace through getting siddhis, mystic perfections. But the Krishna Bhakta, the devotee of Krishna, easily has peace because the Krishna Bhakta is always thinking how to engage everything in Krishna's service, how to spread Krishna's glories. That is samadhi in its highest sense. If you can understand this point, you'll have finally gotten to the root of our sampradaya. Rupa Goswami has given us yukta vairagya. Not artificial renunciation, but real renunciation, appropriate renunciation, recognizing that everything belongs to Krishna and using it for Krishna's pleasure. And you're always thinking about that. Whether it's your wife, your husband, your children, your home, your car, your money, your time, you're always thinking, how can I use this in Krishna's service? That is samadhi. Naturally, that samadhi thickens and becomes more intense. Just like in the home of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He talks about in his song, Shuddha Bhakata Charanarenu, that while he was doing Sundarti in his home, he's offering arti to his deities, suddenly he saw his whole house turn into the spiritual world. So that is mature samadhi. But you are embarking on the path to that destination. Yesterday we gave the example of the ripe mango and the unripe mango. Both are mangoes. It's simply that in the matter of time, the unripe or the green mango will become ripe. So your devotional service will become ripe in time if you stick with it. Therefore, we spoke yesterday about seeing your Krishna consciousness, your bhakti, as a lifelong career. We spoke about how people can wait 25 years to rise on the corporate ladder, or wait that long for some business investment to yield, or wait for their own private business to become successful. And everyone approves of that. So why can't we approve of someone taking 20, 25 years to intensify their samadhi, their contact with Krishna through connecting everything to Krishna? But you don't have to wait 20 or 25 years to get some realization of Krishna. Even as a neophyte, you can begin the process, and gradually everything will become sweeter. Just like sugar water hardens and becomes rock candy. Therefore, Krishna is teaching you in Bhagavad Gita. Rasaham apsukontya. I am the taste in water. I am the light of the sun and the moon. So we discussed how you should not look down on these instructions as if they're poetry, metaphorical. No, Krishna is teaching you how to begin to capture him. So please remember that. Now, We also discussed how by your coming to the temple, what are you doing? When you see the deities, when you associate with devotees in the sanctified atmosphere, you are filling the core of your heart with Krishna impressions. And that helps your samadhi at home. You come to the temple, you see the deity, which is worshipped strictly according to the shastra. You take prasad that's offered to the deity, you associate with devotees, you chant, you hear about Krishna, the glories of the Lord. All those impressions go deep into your heart. Therefore, when you go in the outside world, you can more easily connect everything to Krishna. We also spoke about namaparad, the offensive stage of chanting. The offensive stage of chanting means that you think, or by your actions you're showing, that there's some difference between the Lord and His name. Attentive chanting means you're striving to chant the Lord's name because that is the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly 100%. But offensive chanting means either by your thinking or by your behavior of inattentiveness, you're implying that Krishna is different from His name. Because of those offenses, we don't have that strong connection. We don't see strongly how everything is Krishna's energy and related to Him. It's weak. And even Maya can get into our mind and disturb it. The illusory energy enters your mind and inspires you. Wouldn't you like to be the Lord of material nature? Wouldn't you like to exploit material resources? Wouldn't you like to be the enjoyer? The more you chant with attention, the more careful you are about offenses when you're chanting, the more you'll be able to see everything around you as diverse extensions of the Lord's energy. So please remember that. Now, if you discuss amongst devotees how everything is Krishna's, how everything can be used in Krishna's service, that makes your samadhi even more intense. You're beginning on the path to samadhi. And so that experience can become more intense by discussing with other devotees. That's easily seen when you come visit the mandir. And Lord Kapiladeva, the incarnation of Krishna, for teaching Sankhya Yoga, he says, Satam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavanti hritkarna rasayana kata. When my devotees gather together to talk about me, the power of those talks is much more than if they're on their own. Taj Joshinat Ashu Apavarga Vartmani, and the doorway to liberation swings wide open. Shadharati Apuktira Nukramishati. They get Shadha, firm faith and conviction. Rati, taste. And bhakti, transcendental, loving service for the Lord. So this is our program here, the samadhi program. But it's not the samadhi you might have thought. It is a samadhi of seeing how everything is connected to Krishna, seeing how everything can be used in Krishna's service, and discussing it. Discuss it with your husband, wife, children, relatives, grandfather, grandmother. Discuss it with other devotees. That is how the samadhi becomes more intensified. Therefore, the sangha, the association of devotees, is so important. You're thickening your samadhi that way. This is Prabhupada's practical explanation of samadhi. In other words, you have every opportunity. Therefore, anyone who is practicing bhakti yoga is far beyond a mystic yogi. Even the mystic yogi has mastered the mystic perfections. Still, the bhakti yogi is superior. Superior to the jnana yogi, who's speculating what is real, what is not real, and who's attracted to merging into Brahman. The bhakti yogi is far superior. So this is the opportunity you have. Now, when we speak about seeing Krishna, we should understand that according to how you're situated, you'll see Krishna differently. The same Krishna is seen in different ways according to your consciousness. Material life means that the cloud of anarthas, or dirty things in the heart, covers your vision, and therefore you can't see Krishna as he is. The bhakti process purifies that cloud of dirt, and then you can fulfill Krishna's prerequisite, his preliminary requirement. Yesham ta antakatam bhavam jananam punyakarmanam. Only those who have made antakata papa, complete stop to sinful activity, they can approach my devotional service. By your making a stop to the pillars of Kali Yuga, especially the four sinful activities, then you can start to see. You can start to understand. Otherwise, Krishna can be present right before you and you'll see him as an ordinary person. This is what happened 5,000 years ago when Krishna was present in Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka. He was seen according to the consciousness of the perceiver. It's not that when Krishna was present 5,000 years ago, everyone saw him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We discussed that yesterday, yesterday morning, when we were speaking about the devotee of Lord Chaitanya, Sri Mukunda, and how finally he got Lord Chaitanya's darshan. And then he told Lord Chaitanya, seeing you is not the most important thing. Having the right bhakti attitude is most important. Otherwise, so many demons have seen the Lord. But what was the use? They didn't know what they were looking at. They couldn't understand. So Sri Mukunda, remember, he went down that whole list. Duryodhana and company, they saw the Virat Rup, the universal form of the Lord. They didn't care. They went on with their battle plans. Hiranyaksha saw Varahadev. Didn't stop him from fighting with the Lord. He was killed. Hiranyakashipu saw Nrisimhadev. At the time of Rukmini's proposed marriage to Shishupal, Lord Krishna came. But no one said, oh, here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Let him take Rukmini. No, they fought with him. What were some of the other examples he gave? Does anyone remember? Kamsa. Kamsa, yes. He saw Krishna. But we'll discuss that a little bit today. What was the... He saw Krishna, but not the same Krishna that you and I will see. Because his attitude was asarika bhava. He had the bhava, the emotional state of a demon. We don't want asarika bhava. We want the bhava, which is the preliminary phase of praying, love of Krishna. There are different types of bhavas. And according to your bhava or emotional state of absorption, you'll see Krishna differently. When Krishna was present 5,000 years ago, most people thought he was an extraordinarily powerful human being. That's all. Even amongst the Yadu dynasty, many thought he was the super soul. Very few understood that this is the original personality of Godhead. Let's go to Mathura Dham. Krishna and Balaram have left Vrindavan. Akura has broken the hearts of the gopis and taken Krishna and Balaram to Mathura at the request of Kamsa. Krishna and Balaram have been wandering through Mathura, just causing havoc. You know, you've heard, it doesn't happen in Australia, but sometimes in Europe when there are big football matches and there are the battles between the British hooligans and the German football fans, and in fact many persons, they go to a football game in another country just to fight. They tear up the whole city, and it's a big problem in Europe. So, where does that tendency come from? It's there in Krishna. Yes, when he and Balaram were touring Mathura to see the sights, they just acted whatever way they wanted. They saw someone with cloth meant for the king, bring that to us. They saw Kubja, the hunchbacked old lady with sandalwood pulp for the king, bring it over here. If someone didn't comply with their wishes, off with their head. They're just wandering around Kamsa's city. Kamsa thought, this is my city. It's actually Mathura Dham, the holy place of the Lord. And they're just doing whatever they like. They broke that bow, which no one could even lift. Krishna lifted it, strung it, broke it, no problem. And then he killed all of the Kamsa's watchmen who were guarding the bow. And then what did he and Balaram do? They went back to their quarters. They bathed in the Jamuna River. Just relaxing. But what's Kamsa doing? He's seeing his death is coming. He looks in the mirror. He doesn't see any head on his reflection. As he's walking around, he sees his shadows on the ground. He sees his shadow on the ground. There are holes in the shadow. He's wondering, what's going on? What's going on? I must kill Krishna, even though he can't be killed. That was Kamsa's dilemma. He knew Krishna can't be killed, but he was completely intent to kill Krishna. This is the epitome of craziness. But this is what the Mitchell energy drives you to, such a crazy position. I must enjoy, even though I can't be happy. I'm going to do it anyway. And I'll do it in a pious way. I'll sponsor a puja once a year. And that'll be all. Everything will be fine. So, Kamsa was terrified. He had to kill Krishna, even though Krishna couldn't be killed. So, now it's time. It's the day of the wrestling match. All the dignitaries, the neighboring kings, have gathered in their royal seats in the wrestling arena. Nanda Maharaj and the elder gopas from Vrindavan, they've come bearing tribute to milk products for the king. The acharyas explain how Kamsa greeted Nanda Maharaj and the Vrijavasis. Welcome, welcome. He was a politician, Kamsa. He was expert at flattery. Nanda Maharaj, you're the best of my village rulers. You should not fear me just because I've invited your boys for a wrestling match. Then Kamsa realized, speaking of the boys, where are they? What had happened? Krishna and Balaram, without telling their father, they just decided to show up when they wanted to. They just said, we'll come to the wrestling arena when we feel like it. They were relaxing back at the Jamuna River. And Kamsa's wondering, where are they? Where are they? You know, you're supposed to be there for the start of the wrestling match. The musicians are there. They're playing lively music to encourage the wrestlers. All the pomp and pageantry. It's like the opening of the Commonwealth Games or something. The Commonwealth Games are opening, the great ceremony. They had such a thing. Didn't they have you have the stick from the Queen? Yes? Yes. The sacred scepter. They have some rituals, yes? So, suppose all this is going on, and you know, the two main persons who are supposed to be participating in the Commonwealth Games, they don't show up. Krishna and Balaram are just showing. We do our own thing. We come when we want to. They did it on purpose. So Kamsa had Nanda Maharaj send some Brijvasi messengers to tell Krishna and Balaram to come. So, of course, as Krishna and Balaram were entering the wrestling arena with their cowherd boys, there was one minor impediment from Krishna's point of view, but a major impediment from Kamsa's point of view. Kuvalayapid, the killer elephant, who was there to finish off Krishna and Balaram even before there could be a wrestling match. You know what happened. We won't go into detail about that aspect of the Leela. How Krishna played with the elephant, prolonging the whole battle just so Krishna could enjoy. And then Krishna pulled out the tusk of the elephant, beat him to death, killed the caretaker too. And Balaram pulled out the other tusk. And then each brother with an elephant tusk on his shoulder, followed by the cowherd boys, they marched into the arena. Sending a message to Kamsa. Krishna's looking very beautiful. How is the Supreme Personality of Godhead looking? He has beads of elephant perspiration on him and beads of elephant blood on him. And then he has beads of his own perspiration too. He's shining with such an attractive effulgence that everyone who's watching, they're just overpowered by the effulgence coming from Krishna. So, as Krishna and Balaram marched into the arena, everyone could see him. But what did they see? They saw Krishna according to their own viewpoint. This is very important. Right in Krishna Lila, you have an example of everyone so-called seeing Krishna, but they see completely differently. What does the Shastra say? First of all, what did the wrestlers see? Did they see Swayam Bhagavan the way you would see Swayam Bhagavan? No. What did the wrestlers see? A lightning bolt. Thunderbolt. And what was the bhava they had? Their emotional state? Fury. Now actually, you see the Acharyas point out, they were not tasting the real presence of Krishna. They were tasting a perverted rasa because they're demons. So even though it seems they're seeing Krishna, they're not actually experiencing the same Krishna as a devotee would. Even their fury, their anger, is not like a secondary rasa of love of God. No, it's perverted, because they're not devotees. Primary and secondary rasas in their pure state are felt by devotees only. So then, what about the men of Mathura? What did they see when they saw Krishna? Who knows? None of our, the best of all human beings. And because they were having a favorable attitude, they were seeing as devotees, therefore they were experiencing the secondary rasa of wonder. Oh, this is the best man! Transcendental. And what did the ladies of Mathura see? Who knows? No, not exactly. The young ladies of Mathura. What did the young ladies of Mathura see? No, don't speculate. Cupid personified. And what was their emotional state? Ujjwala rasa, conjugal love. They're seeing as devotees who are attracted in a romantic way to Krishna. Those are the young ladies. What about the cowherd men from Vrindavan? The elders, not the young boys, but the elders. What did they see? Who knows? No, no. Don't speculate. Swajana, he's our hometown boy. Have no fear, Krishna is here. He's one of us. He's our homeboy. That's what they saw. And what was their mood? Laughter. They were filled with transcendental merriment. And then there were many friends of Kamsa, allies, political allies, rulers. What did they see when they saw Krishna? They saw the chastiser. This is someone who can curb us. This is someone who can give us the reactions to our actions. In that way, their mood is described as one of chivalry. Like, we see a superior military force that can cut us down. And what about Krishna's parents who were there? Vasudeva, Devaki, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda were also there. What did they see? Huh? Yes, this is our child. So they felt both vatsalya ras, parental love, and karuna, mercy. Who else was there? Unintelligent people were there. What did unintelligent people see? Just see how elevated the unintelligent people were then compared to the unintelligent people now. The unintelligent people of Mathura, what did they see? The Virat Rup, the universal form. But they're described as unintelligent. It's nothing very special to see the Virat Rup or the universal form of Krishna. And what were they feeling in seeing that universal form? They're feeling ghastliness, because universal form, it doesn't inspire love in you. It's very ferocious. It's very there's no better word than ghastliness. You're surprised to the point of horrified. Kamsa, what did he see? Death. And what was he feeling? He was feeling terror. What about the mystic yogis there? What did they see? Supreme absolute truth. And what were they feeling? Shantaras, peaceful neutrality. They hadn't advanced further to dasharas, servitorship, love of God. No, they just were in the inactive stage of appreciating the greatness of the absolute truth. So they were peaceful Shantabhaktas. Real rasa begins with dasyaras, servitorship. So they were just appreciating in an inactive way. And then, so many members of the Vrishni dynasty were there. Krishna is known as Varshneya. He's the member of the Vrishni dynasty. So, his Vrishni relatives, what did they see? Paradevata, the worshipable Lord. What was their mood? What was their bhava? Prema bhakti in dasharas. Love of God, they're feeling as servants of the Lord. So all these different types are there, and they're seeing the Supreme Lord in different ways, although they're all looking at the Supreme Lord because of their consciousness. They have completely different experiences and completely different visions. That is why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yayata mam prapajyante tams tataiva vajamyam. As you deal with me, I deal with you. As you treat me, I reciprocate exactly in that way. So Krishna showed that as he entered the wrestling arena of Kamsa. So please remember that Kamsa and the other miscreants or demons there, they did not actually taste Krishna as the devotees did. They had a perverted experience because the cloud of Maya is intervening. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrita. I don't manifest myself to everyone. I have my curtain that I put in between the living entity and me. That curtain is Maya. Queen Kunti talks about this in the ninth chapter of the first canto of Bhagavatam. Maya javanikachanyam ajarokshidam avyayam na lakshase mudadrisha. The mudhas, the fools, they can't see. Why? Because of that curtain of Maya. They don't recognize who the supreme actor is on the stage. Just like if, maybe, let's say, you're in a drama and you have some costume on and you're acting out a role. Your child won't recognize you. Who is that? Who is that? Have you ever had an experience of seeing a drama and actually someone you knew was one of the characters and later you realize it? Yes. So this is Kunti Devi's example. Just like you can't recognize an actor on the stage for what his or her real identity is. Similarly, those blinded by the curtain of Maya, they can't see Krishna. That Krishna that she was talking about. Namaste purusham twadyam ishvaram prakrite param alaksham sabhabhutanam anta bahir pravastita. She offered her obeisances to Krishna. You're the original person, the supreme controller. You're the original cause. You're beyond the modes of material nature. What else? Krishnaya, Vasudevaya, Devaki Nandanaya cha, Nanda Gopa Kumaraya. She identified Krishna completely. But then, Maya Javanikashtranya, because of the curtain of Maya, conditioned souls can't see this Krishna, this Govinda, this Vasudeva, this Devaki Nand. They can't see him. They see something, but it's according to their pollutions that they see. This is a very important example in seeing Krishna. How is it that you can perceive Krishna as dangerous or threatening? How is it that you can perceive Krishna as angry? Who knows? No. You misunderstood my phrasing. How is it that you could think that Krishna is threatening to you? Because you're rebelling. Are there certain sections of Melbourne where if the police cars drive up the street, everyone feels very threatened and angry? Which section is that? Broad Meadows. Yes. Brody. In a normal section of the city, like in your neighborhood, if you see a police car, do you feel threatened? You're glad the police are there. There should be more of these guys. You've got nothing to hide. So you're very happy that the police are there. You don't feel threatened. You don't cringe. Oh, police car. But just go into another section of the city, the Broad Meadows, and as soon as the residents see a police car, immediately they tense up. They got something to hide. They're doing something wrong. So if you're a law-abiding, peaceful citizen in Krishna's kingdom, you don't fear Krishna. But if you're anti-Krishna, if you're rebelling against Krishna, then you've got this attitude that Krishna is threatening to you. He's going to punish you. He's angry. He's mean. Just like someone was asking the question yesterday, well, why doesn't Krishna just let us do what we want, you know? And of course, you won't let your children do what they want. Still, you accuse Krishna that if you want us to be Krishna conscious, just make us Krishna conscious. Why do we have to go through all the effort? Well, what is that effort? That is the sign that you want to love. You don't want friends or husbands or wives who don't endeavor to do anything to please you. How many want that kind of relationship? How many men want your wife to say, when Krishna wants, then I will cook dinner? Anyone want? It's all up to him. When he wants, then I will clean the house. And how many ladies here want the kind of husband who says, when Krishna wants, then I will pay the bills. When Krishna wants, then I will come home in the evening. It's up to him. He does everything. No, you want to see a voluntary effort. And that is what makes you happy, that you're seeing that someone is making an effort to care, to show appreciation. So why do we want Krishna to have inferior forced love when we don't want that ourselves? No, you want voluntary, heartfelt expression. Krishna is Purushottam, the Supreme Person. He certainly wants your voluntary, heartfelt affection. So bhakti yoga is the process by which you develop and refine that heartfelt affection. Remember, raso vai sa, that taste of a loving exchange, that is Krishna himself. This is what the Shastra says. Now, we'll go back to the wrestling arena of Kamsa. The elephant is dead. It's obvious the two brothers are invincible. Kamsa is filled with anxiety. The boys are marching into the wrestling arena, shining with such effulgence. That effulgence overpowers the minds of all the onlookers. That's why in the Upanishad, there's that verse, Haranmayena Patrena, my Lord, please remove the shining effulgence so I can see your face. So when Krishna first walked into the wrestling arena, his effulgence was overpowering everyone. Now you're going to get a lesson from the Bhagavatam in what is real happiness. As the citizens of Mathura, the Mathura Vasis, as they looked at Krishna, what happened to them? This is real happiness. The force of their happiness caused their eyes to open wide, and then their whole face began to blossom. And they, with their eyes, drank up the sight of Krishna. Have you ever experienced that kind of happiness? The force of your happiness causes your eyes to open wide. As the happiness just wells up, rises up in you, your eyes open wide, your whole face blossoms, and you begin to drink up the beauty of the Lord with your eyes. That is seeing Krishna. You can practice when you go see the deity. You can pray to the deity. When will that day come when my eyes will open wide, forced wide open by the rising bliss in me, and my face blossoms, and with my eyes I just want to drink up the beauty of Sri Sri Radha Balabha. So you pray to the deities through disciple succession. When will that day be mine? So the residents of Mathura, they're teaching you how to look at Krishna if you're a devotee. They're teaching you the bhava that a devotee feels, the pressure of the happiness. You ever felt the pressure of such happiness that your eyes open wide? Therefore, we say there's no real happiness in this world. Only the bhakta knows this kind of happiness, the real happiness. So, Shukadeva Goswami describes that not only were the people drinking Krishna and Balaram with their eyes just drinking up the beauty of the two brothers, but with their tongues, they seemed to be licking the Lord's. And with their nose, they're smelling the Lord's. And they're embracing them with their arms. Looking at Krishna and Balaram, everyone began to remember their name, fame, glories, qualities, pastimes. And they all simultaneously began talking about Krishna and Balaram, remembering their activities, which they had heard. We heard that in Vrindavan they did this, they did that. We heard so many things. They killed this demon. They killed that demon. Krishna killed this one. Balaram killed that one. Sometimes they would get the details mixed up because it was secondhand information. Sometimes they would say that Balaram killed the demon when actually Krishna had killed him. But, you know, that's the way it is when you know, the grapevine. But still, they're talking about Krishna. Everyone in the whole wrestling arena, at least the devotees, they begin buzzing, talking about Krishna's glories. They began to philosophically speculate. These boys must be they must be expansions of Narayan. Yes, that's right. In this way, the whole arena is absorbed in Krishna Katha. The whole arena, that is the devotees. You'll find out later about the mentality of Kamsa and his advisors and his cronies and allies. So after speaking about Krishna's leelas, remember he did this, remember he did that, then what? It's time to begin the wrestling match. One of the wrestlers, Chanura, he got tired of all this Krishna katha. Enough is enough, he felt. We're here to kill Krishna. And the whole arena is just buzzing with Krishna katha. I can't take it anymore. Let's get on with the show. The people were talking. The musicians were playing. It was a gala event. But Chanura decided it's time for action. So he went up to speak to Krishna and Balaram. You both are known to be very courageous. You both are very skillful at wrestling. The king has heard about how you wrestle in the forest of Vrindavan, and he summoned you here wanting to see your wrestling prowess for himself. Now, let me give you a brief lesson in political science. You're the subject of the king. You should try to please him in every way. And that way you'll get good fortune. But if you fail to please the king, your destination will be unknown. It's well known what goes on in the forest of Vrindavan. You cowherd boys wrestle while herding your cows. We know you became expert at wrestling in this way. So we've invited you here so you can display your wrestling talents. Then Chanura gave his final piece of advice. Let's do whatever the king wants. In that way, everyone will be pleased because the king is the embodiment of all living beings. He was very philosophical. But Kamsa hadn't hired him for his philosophical abilities, exactly. So, Chanura made that presentation. What was Krishna's reaction? Krishna was eager. He likes to wrestle, and he easily welcomed the challenge. However, the Lord is the maintainer of Dharma. So therefore, just because for the sake of religious principles, the Lord reminded Chanura, look, it's true that we're all subjects of the king. You live in the jungle, we live in the forest. And it's true we must all gratify the king's desires. In that way, we'll get the greatest benefit. Krishna here is speaking ordinary politics. He's not going to try to preach to a demon. He's speaking to Chanura on his own level. Mundane politics. Then Krishna reminded him, please note, we're just young boys. We only play in the forest with cowherd boys of equal strength. If the wrestling match is to proceed properly, it should be amongst equals. Otherwise, irreligion will taint this assembly. What was Chanura's response? We all know the truth about you. You're neither young or old. You've got extraordinary strength. We've all just seen it. You killed Kuvalayapi, the elephant. Just stop the talk. Right now, you're going to fight us. I'll fight you. Balaram fights Mushtika. That's the way it's going to be. Chanura was so eager to die. So, we won't go into details of the wrestling match. But one thing I want to point out is as the four were wrestling, exhibiting so many top wrestling maneuvers, throwing each other, squeezing each other, picking one another up and carrying them and dropping them on the mat. And to ordinary eyes, it seemed that all the wrestlers were struggling so hard for victory that they were willing to even hurt themselves. They were injuring themselves in the process. Of course, Krishna, he doesn't injure himself. Balaram doesn't injure himself. But ordinary eyes saw this in that way. These wrestlers, they're giving everything for the victory. They're even hurting themselves. That's how it could appear if you didn't have transcendental knowledge, if you weren't a devotee, if you lacked the eyes of a devotee. What was going on in the arena in terms of the spectators? Who does Shukadeva Goswami talk about first amongst the onlookers? Shukadeva Goswami points out, what are the ladies thinking and talking about? You see, the Bhagavatam understands who has the real power in the world. In the ordinary sense. In the ordinary world. But actually in the spiritual world too. It is spiritual ladies who have the most power, but they don't have material gender. They don't have material bodies. Therefore, amongst devotees who know the truth of Krishna Leela, devotees know who is the real controller of Vrindavan. So, Shukadeva Goswami, immediately when he's talking about the spectators, he's going to talk about what are the ladies thinking? What are the ladies saying? Because of a lady's compassion, they were so upset. How can this go on? These wrestlers are like mountains, and Krishna and Balaram, their body is so soft. It was the softness of the body of Krishna and Balaram that the thought of that just overwhelmed these ladies. You see, their compassion was based on natural attraction for the Supreme Lord. So they were so upset at what was happening. They considered that this is irreligion. Anyone who stays in this assembly and doesn't speak out, they'll be affected with sinful activity, sinful reactions. Anyone who's righteous must say something. How can we be here? How can the king watch this? Who can tolerate this battle between the strong and the weak? In this assembly, religious principles have certainly been violated. We actually shouldn't remain here for a moment. Now, there were different groups of ladies. They were assembled in groups throughout the arena. just like, you know, ordinarily ladies gather together in little clusters and they talk. Does it happen here in the temple? In the courtyard or in the hallways? So now you see the transcendental origins of that behavior. Different groups of ladies would gather in the wrestling arena and they're all talking. What's going on? This is horrible. Krishna's body is so soft. They're so beautiful. And those wrestlers, Chanura and Mushtika, they're like mountains. This has to stop. Then, in some of those groups, there were, the acharyas explain, yajnika brahmanis, the wives of the yajnik brahmanas. Remember the brahmanas who did not feed Krishna and Balaram, but their wives did that? Some of them, or persons related to them, were in the wrestling arena. So obviously, by their service to Krishna, or by their contact with the wives of the brahmanas who served Krishna so wonderfully, they had a very penetrating vision of what was going on. Now, what is the nature of the mentality of these yajnik brahmanis, the wives of the yajnik brahmanas? They have the mood of prem, love of Krishna, mixed with Aishvarya gyan. They had knowledge of Krishna's opulences mixed in with their prem. Therefore, they were aware of the Lord's power. At the same time, they disapproved of what was going on, because their most powerful feeling was for attraction to the Lord beyond his power. But still, there was awareness, there was Aishvarya again mixed in. What did they say? To indicate their displeasure. In an indirect way, they began to criticize Mathura. They said, "How pious are the tracts of land in Braj, for there the primeval personality of Godhead, disguising himself with human traits, wanders about enacting his many pastimes. Adorned with wonderfully variegated forest flowers, he whose feet are worshipped by Lord Shiva and Goddess Rama, he vibrates his flute as he tends the cows in the company of Balaram." So what does this mean? How pious are the tracts of land in Braj? Actually, in a very discreet, polite way, they're condemning Mathura. It's subtle. Real culture is very subtle. So by their glorifying Vrindavan, they're putting down Mathura. What they're actually saying, the acharyas explain, is that in Mathura you can drink the sweet beverage of love of Krishna. But here in Mathura, in Vrindavan you drink that sweet beverage of love of Krishna, but in Mathura we're drinking the poison of seeing Krishna in this dangerous, unfair wrestling match. How fortunate are the residents of Vrindavan, the tract of land known as Vrindavan. There, Krishna plays his flute, he tends the cows. But look at Mathura in contrast. Look at what's going on in Mathura. This horribly unjust, violent wrestling match. In this way, they're criticizing Mathura Dham. Now, please bear in mind, of course, Mathura is a holy Dham. But these ladies are just overwhelmed with affection for Krishna and just outrage at such a lack of compassion. So they were buzzing like this amongst themselves. And their buzzing is eternally part of the Shastra. Their buzzings are quoted by Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Charitamrita. They describe that wandering in Vrindavan is Krishna who's disguised as a human being. In other words, material persons can't see Krishna. He's the Purana Purusha, the primeval personality of Godhead. Yet, ordinary people see him to be a human being. So after glorifying the tracts of land in Vrindavan, they next glorify the residents of Vrindavan. And they go right to the most precious residents of Vrindavan, Krishna's cowherd damsels. So what do they say? Here you have this verse quoted by Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It is especially wonderful when Bhagavatam is quoted by Krishna as his own devotee. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya is reciting Bhagavatam verses. And if you try to understand, how is it that the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is reciting these Bhagavatam verses, then your life will become perfect. So we'll chant that verse now. Gopyastapa kimacharanyaramusha rupam.
Gopyastapa kimacharanyaramusha rupam.
Lavanya saramasamodvam ananya siddham.
Lavanya saramasamodvam.
Trigbi pibanchanusava binavam durapam. Ekanta dhamma yashasa shriya aishvarasya.
Ekanta dhamma yashasa
shriya aishvarasya. Gopyasta pakyam acharan yaramusha rupam.
Gopyasta pakyam acharan yaramusha rupam.
Lavanya saramasamudvam ananya siddham.
Lavanya saramasamudvam.
Drigbi pibanchanu sava bhinavam durapam.
Drigbi pibanchanu sava bhinavam.
Ekanta dhamma yashasa shriya aishvarasya.
Ekanta dhamma yashasa shriya
aishvarasya. Gopyasta pakyam acharan yaramusha rupam. Lavanya saram asamodvam ananya siddham.
Lavanya saram
asamodvam ananya siddham. Drigbi pipanchanu sava binavam durapam.
Drigbi pipanchanu sava
Ekanta dhamma yashasa shriya aishvarasya.
Ekanta dhamma yashasa shriya
aishvarasya. This very important verse from the Bhagavatam, spoken by Lord Chaitanya, repeated by Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Charitamrita, teaches you about the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a very intimate way. What austerities must the gopis have performed? With their eyes, they always drink the nectar of Lord Krishna's form, which is the essence of loveliness and is not to be equaled or surpassed. That loveliness is the only abode of beauty, fame, and opulence. It is self-perfect, ever fresh, and extremely rare. So how do the acharyas explain this verse? The ladies of Mathura are saying, is there anyone here who's omniscient? If there's someone here in the wrestling arena who's omniscient, we want that omniscient person to tell us what kind of austerities did the gopis in Vrindavan do to attain the vision of this person, Krishna. This verse can teach you about how devotees always appreciate other devotees. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is explained that the natural effect of Krishna prema, love of God, is that you always think, I have none and everyone else has more. If you're truly becoming Krishna conscious, you'll begin to feel that way. Everyone else is much more Krishna conscious than me. That's the paradoxical effect of love of God. The more you advance, the more you think, I'm very low and everyone else is better. So they're glorifying the residents of Vrindavan, particularly the gopis. As Lord Chaitanya says, Ramya kaschid upasana pajavadu vagena kalpita. There's no better way of loving Krishna than that way demonstrated by the cowherd ladies of Vrindavan. So here, the residents of Mathura are wanting to know, is there someone here who knows everything and can tell us what the gopis did to get this vision, to get to see this sight? We want to do the same thing. And then they describe what they're seeing. That the gopis in Vrindavan would see so intimately. They describe the vision of the gopis of Vrindavan. With their eyes, they always drink the nectar of Lord Krishna's form. You can begin like this when you go into the temple room and look at Shishi Radhavala. You start looking at their feet and then raise your vision gradually to the face. That's the way you greet a respectable person. And with your eyes, you can drink up the beauty of the deities. So the women of Mathura are wondering and exclaiming how these gopis would drink the nectar of Krishna's form. Now they're going to give you, while describing that beautiful experience, they're going to give you a lesson in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why he is supreme. They say, Lavanya Saram Asamordvam Ananya Siddham. First of all, who is Krishna? He's Lavanya Sar, the essence of all loveliness. You cannot say that a characteristic of Krishna is his beauty. It is more precise to say that the essence of Krishna is beauty. That's even more to the point, more to the core. Not that you have some beauty or you have beauty. No, you are beauty itself. You are the essence of all beauty. Lavanyasar. Asamordham. There's no one equal to you, and there's no one who can surpass you. Not even Narayan and Vaikuntha. The Acharyas explained, that's the hidden meaning of this point. Asamordham. Even Narayan and Vaikuntha cannot surpass Krishna's beauty. Ananya Siddham. That means Krishna is not perfected by anything outside of himself. His perfection is self-caused. He's self-perfect. He's the only person who can say that. He's self-perfect. It's not that Krishna's perfection comes from outside of himself. No, it's all within. Therefore, Lavanya Sadam Asamudvam Ananya Siddham. So then, knowing that, what are the gopis doing? Dhrigbi Pibant Janusavam Pinavam Durapam. They're drinking it all up with their eyes, that nectar. And what's the nature of that nectar? Because you might say, okay, the gopis, they see Krishna one time, two times, three times. After that, naturally, you get used to it. The freshness goes away. You have not experienced anyone in this material world who you can look at. You can look at that person continuously, and the experience doesn't deteriorate. Has it ever happened to you? No. That's the nature of material bodies. The most beautiful person in the material world with a material body. You can't just look at that person, look at that person, look at that person without the experience deteriorating. Because the material world is ruled by time, and time affects everything. But when you look at Krishna, no. What does the Shastra say? Anusava Abhinavam. Constantly new. So in this way, the ladies of Mathura are teaching you about Gopi Bhava. That even though the gopis see Krishna again and again and again, every time they see him is ever fresh, Navarasa, newer and newer and newer. This is the spiritual world they're talking about. Nevertheless, Krishna is Durapam, difficult to obtain. Why? Even the goddess of fortune can't attain this. Ekanta Dhamma Yashasa Shriya Aishvarasya. He's the only abode of fame and beauty and opulence. So just see the mercy of these ladies of Mathura. While they're describing the good fortune of the damsels of Vrindavan, they're teaching us the science of the Supreme. Then they begin to talk about samadhi. Remember, we've been speaking of what real samadhi is? In this verse, in this next verse, the ladies of Mathura, via the ladies of Vrindavan, are going to teach you how to be in samadhi. They're going to describe the gopis' activities. What do they do? The ladies of Braj are the most fortunate of women because with their minds fully attached to Krishna and their throats always choked up with tears, they constantly sing about him while milking the cows, winnowing grain, churning butter, gathering cow dung for fuel, riding on swings, taking care of their crying babies, sprinkling the ground with water, cleaning their houses, and so on. By their exalted Krishna consciousness, they automatically acquire all desirable things. Now, in Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada explains that here is the way of samadhi. By the gopis doing their household duties, they were always in contact with Krishna. When feeding their babies or cleaning the house or taking care of the cows, they were always speaking Krishna's glories. Their minds were always fully attached to Krishna, so much that their throats were choked with tears as they were doing their household duties. So Srila Prabhupada uses this in the Krishna book as an example of how we should be in samadhi. All the duties we do should be saturated with thoughts of this is for Krishna, how much this is going to increase my service, or how much this is going to allow me to live a Krishna conscious life, or how much this action I'm doing will help others to be Krishna conscious. That is samadhi. That is the topmost samadhi. And Lord Chaitanya certifies Ramya Kachchit Upasana Vrajavadu Agena Kalpita. There's no better way of getting into samadhi than that shown by the cowherd damsels of Vrindavan. Throughout their household duties of the day, they're always thinking of Krishna, chanting about Krishna, serving Krishna. This is what we're trying to do. This is what we're aspiring for. And you have to start somewhere. So where do you begin? Rasaham apsukonteya prabhasmi shashi surya. Krishna's the taste in water. Krishna's the light of the sun and the moon. You have to start somewhere. And if you stick to it, the result will be there. The ladies of Mathura continue with their glorification of Vrindavan Dham. They talk about what happens when Krishna leaves Vrindavan village to go to the forest, and when he returns in the evening, all the ladies gather to meet him as he's coming and going. How many pious activities did these girls do to be able to see the sight of Krishna walking on the road into the forest and coming back from the forest? With his smiling face, he's glancing upon these girls. How fortunate are they? All this talk is going on in the arena. And what is Krishna doing? He's omniscient indeed, even though he's absorbed in the wrestling match. He can hear the ladies buzzing. And because of their pure love for him, Krishna decides, all right, enough of playing with Shanura. Time to kill him. The ladies are talking. They're attracted to me. What can I do? He's Purusha Bhushan, the ornament of all men. Krishna is the real man. Everyone else is female. So as he's wrestling Chanura, he can hear the ladies because he's Yogeshwara. He doesn't hear materially. He hears because he's the master of all mystic power. Can you imagine you are fighting, you know, the most ferocious wrestler in the world, whose body is like a mountain, and you're a, you know, teenage boy with a soft body. Your body is so soft that when you walk in the forest and your body touches the leaves, your body changes colors. That's how tender your body is. And now you're wrestling with this man mountain named Chanura, and your brother's fighting Mushtika, and you're just locked into deadly combat. Meanwhile, the ladies in the arena are talking this way and that way, and you can hear it all while you're fighting. And without breaking your concentration on wrestling, you just decide, oh, this has gone on too long. It's time for me to kill this demon. These ladies, they're attracted to me. So, what can be done? I don't want them to feel any pain, so I'll kill them. Okay. That is how Krishna is viewing the situation. And you also have Vasudeva and Devaki there. What is their situation? They began to feel temporary ignorance of the Lord's power because they were influenced by the ladies talking. See, Vasudeva and Devaki are in between the Mathura platform and the Vrindavan platform. They have love for Krishna as their son. At the same time, they also have knowledge of his power and opulence. They have Aishwarya Gyan. They're different than Nanda and Yashoda. Nanda and Yashoda never cared to see how powerful Krishna is. They just wanted to love Krishna as their son. But sometimes Vasudeva and Devaki would see Krishna as their son, and sometimes they would see him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But right now, they've been hearing the ladies buzz about, oh, what a horrible thing this wrestling match is. Tender, beautiful Krishna, and these ferocious wrestlers. So Vasudeva and Devaki, they become temporarily unaware of Krishna's power and opulence, and their vatsalya ras, their pure parental affection, overtakes them. And they also begin to wonder, oh, this shouldn't happen. Oh, why did we let our boys come here? We should have kept them at home. Naturally, parents think like that. So that's Vasudeva and Devaki. So, anyway, Krishna's decided to kill Chanura. And so, yes, we won't go into the details of Krishna and Balaram killing the wrestlers. When all the wrestlers are killed, Krishna and Balaram and the coward boys begin to celebrate. They're dancing, their ankle bells are jingling. You know, just like, maybe you've seen some professional boxing match, and when the winning boxer, you know, when the bell sounds at the end and he knows he's the winner, he starts dancing with his boxing gloves in the air. Some of you have seen this, yes? This all comes from Krishna. Janmadiya Sutta. The absolute truth is that from which everything emanates. So even the victory dances of the athletes, it comes from Krishna. So he did exactly that. After he and Balaram killed all the wrestlers, they began to dance with their friends. You know, after a championship athletic match, the rest of the team, the guys sitting on the bench, you know, even some of the spectators who are break free of the police, they can all rush into the center of the field and have a big celebration. You know, what do they do in Australia? They raise him. One. Number one. So Krishna the cowherd boys are doing like that. And the brahmanas in the audience are vibrating shlokas of praise, exclaiming, sadhu, sadhu, excellent, excellent. Everyone is celebrating, except Kamsa's brahmanas. Kamsa had his paid off brahmanas there. And they were very sad to see what happened. And Kamsa was just outraged. He lost it completely. While everyone else is celebrating, suddenly Kamsa just calls out, stop the music! Stop the celebration! I want those two boys, Krishna and Balaram, driven out of town. I want Nanda Maharaj in prison. Vasudeva has cheated me. I want him killed. And now if I think of it, kill my father too, Ugrasen. He's always scheming against me. He just went mad. He's seeing the same situation that the devotees are seeing. But then again, he doesn't see the same situation. He sees horror. He sees death. The devotees see jubilation, ecstasy. They're all looking at the same thing, but they see differently. So at that time, at that point, when Kamsa begins to threaten Nanda Yashoda, the cowherd men, the Brijvasis, Vasudeva, Devaki, Ugrasen, Krishna decides to take action. What does Krishna do? Without being seen by anyone, he jumps from the ground in the center of the arena, high up into the arena where Kamsa had his official throne. This is how expert Krishna is. He did it so quickly, no one could see him. He landed on top of Kamsa, knocked his crown off, and then takes Kamsa and throws him down on the ground below. It's a great athletic ability. But it's not over yet. Then what does Krishna do? After he throws Kamsa way down on the ground below, then Krishna jumps through the air down and lands on top of Kamsa. The Lord was very careful to do this because he didn't want to. He wanted to use Kamsa as a landing pad, you know. He's very expert. Everything is well considered. I'll land on this nice mat that's on the ground now. So he landed on top of Kamsa, and then he beat Kamsa to death. But Krishna's very sensitive. He knew. I think that many people watching, they're fearing that Kamsa's only unconscious. He's knocked out. My mother may be feeling that way, my relatives, my friends. I don't want them to be in anxiety. So, out of sensitivity, what did Krishna do? He grabbed Kamsa's body by the hair and began to drag the body around the arena, just showing everyone, no need to be in anxiety, he's dead. Isn't this sensitivity? So, please remember this vivid lesson in how different persons can look apparently at the same scene and see completely differently. I hope that by hearing this seminar, you'll be inspired to take up the practical process of seeing Krishna in everything, developing your samadhi. I hope you'll understand the rare jewel that Srila Prabhupada has given us, a chance to perfect your life even amidst the present circumstances of Kali Yuga. I hope you remember that. If we had more time, I would end with discussing the part of the talk between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya. But we'll save that for another seminar. Just understand that in this age of Kali, you cannot approach Krishna without going through Lord Chaitanya. It is impossible to develop your Krishna consciousness effectively unless you have the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. They make it possible to be Krishna conscious in this day and age. Oh, please remember that. All right, any questions? Yesterday the questions were becoming very enlivened. Is the gentleman here who was insisting yesterday that when Krishna wants, only then something will happen that I do? Yes? Is he here? Huh? Krishna. He took him. Any other questions? Yes? Yes.
Time for this. Can you please explain the form of Lord Krishna?
We just heard the gopis explain Krishna's form by way of the ladies of Mathura. Lavanya Saram Asamurvam Ananya Siddham. What more explanation do you want? Lavanya Sar, the essence of all loveliness. Asamurvam, nothing is equal or surpasses it. Ananya Siddham, self-perfect. In other words, even the ornaments that Krishna wears, they don't beautify Krishna's body. He, by wearing those ornaments, beautifies the ornaments. Have you ever seen that kind of beauty? Yes?
In order to appreciate the personal aspects of the Lord, because we are talking about the different rasas and all that, is it necessary that one has to go through that sort of extreme, the perfect reflection in the material world, to appreciate that?
No. Why do you think you have to experience misery in order to understand what real pleasure is? You don't have to. That's the way fools learn. You've heard that Kali Yuga mantra, experience is the best teacher? You've heard that? But even, just like you know, in India, people will only quote one half of a shloka that Krishna says. Kamanyeva dhikaraste. You must do your duty. Yes? You've heard this?
Yes.
You must do your duty. Lord Krishna says, Bhagavan Krishna says, you must do your duty. Finish. What's the other half of the verse? Yeah, meaning? Huh? Yeah, you're not entitled to the results. That part is forgotten. Simply, Lord Krishna said we must do our duty. Second part's forgotten. You can't have the results. So, even in Kali Yuga mantras, like experience is the best teacher, the second half is forgotten. What is the second half? For a fool will learn no other way. So you don't have to experience misery in order to know what real pleasure is. Just go for the real pleasure. Go for Krishna Bhakti. Otherwise, you know, things can become very grotesque. Let's say you're walking out on the, what's the street on the beside the shore? Beaconsfield Parade. So that's why I was walking there yesterday. So there you are walking, and you're there with your family, and I come up, and suddenly I crack you over the head with a lead pipe. And you fall unconscious on the ground, your wife is screaming. And then when you come to consciousness, you're very groggy, and you just look at me, you know, why did you do that? And I explain, I'm your friend, I'm helping you. I want you to really be able to experience happiness, therefore you had to suffer first. Would you accept that? It's such a beautiful day outside. Nice temperature, nice sunshine, sea breezes. I didn't think you were enjoying it enough. So I wanted to give you some suffering so that when you came to consciousness again, you'd really appreciate the beautiful day. Would you accept that philosophy? Yes.
I understand that. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I understand to each person that we meet, the choices that are with compassion, humility, and sincerity. In my line of work, I frequently come across people who are either verbally or physically aggressive. How is it possible?
What line of work is that?
I work in an emergency department.
Emergency department, a hospital? What do you do?
I'm a doctor.
Doctor. Mm.
How?
So even they're coming to be treated and they're aggressive and.
If they're under the influence of certain intoxicants, you're frequently faced with either physical or verbal aggression.
You want to know something? Same thing happens to the doctors here. Yes.
My question is how.
No, but consider that point. We also are dealing with, you know, Kali Yuga people. Of course, most of our members here are very cultured and dignified. But we're also reaching out to the general public. And yes, many times they can be that way. So, okay, go on. I just wanted sympathy, you know.
How can we maintain compassion and humility? Can it's so easy to feel anger and frustration and slip into a judgmental mode. How can we maintain our thoughts on Krishna when part of you is saying you must be firm and aggressive and assertive, and the other part of you is saying you must show compassion and humility, but then you may be walked over. How can we maintain...
You are the doctor. The patient must do what you say. That is compassion. If the patient doesn't do what you say, what's going to happen to that patient? Therefore, the best thing is that the doctor says, you must do this. That's compassion.
But I find that if you're judgmental and...
You must judge.
Aggressive, you may not get the best results.
You don't have to be aggressive, but you must make a judgment. This is wrong. I know what's best. You're going to do what I say. If you're admitted to this hospital, you must do what I say.
I find that that doesn't always work. There always has to be a compromise, but how can...
In what way? If someone is in an emergency condition, how do you compromise?
If someone's being verbally, physically aggressive, and there are children in the department, and they're demanding something, sometimes you need to come to a compromise with them.
Just to quiet them down.
Exactly.
We do that here too.
Frustration, jealousy, and you're trying to jump up, and you can't keep your mind as focused on Krishna. What's the best way to constantly keep purity?
Very good question. How much do you chant?
At the moment, once a day, one round.
Yes. So as you gradually increase to at least 16 rounds, you'll find that you'll be able to keep the proper vision and the proper emotions.
Can you be aggressive at the same time as being Krishna conscious?
Yes, if it's the best thing for serving Krishna.
But if by being aggressive you don't feel Krishna as much?
If you want to feel Krishna more, then you must increase your chanting. I'm glad you really have that desire to feel Krishna more. But you have to do what Krishna says. Satatam kirtayantama, always chanting my glories. You can't do it your way. Maybe that's the mistake you're making. Just like the patients who come to you, their head is cracked open, they're bleeding, and they want to tell you, you know, what should happen, what the proper medical procedures should be.
At times, in fear, if they're very aggressive, they often do what they want.
Huh? Yeah, we do the same thing here. Sometimes we have patients here at the Krishna Conscious Hospital who don't want to listen. And in fact, they want to tell you what they should do. And ultimately, the temple president, in a nice, gentle way, has to say, I'm sorry, but this is not the place for you. You may go and do what you like. Come back when you're, you know, really wanting to be cured. So there's a lot of similarities, you see. You know what's underneath everything I'm saying here, right? You may have another career ahead of you. Be a material and a spiritual doctor. Then your life will be perfect. What do you think? Could there be a chance? Oh, I hope so too.
If I have colleagues, very, very sincere colleagues who follow different spiritual masters, some Christ, some Buddha. Are they, if Krishna is in everything, are they indirectly following Krishna?
Yes.
So is there a right path or a wrong path in terms of Sri Krishna, you know, the Buddha, the Christ?
Well, first of all, you have to know where all these paths are leading. Just like there's so many roads in Melbourne. Is there a way that will get you to Perth quicker than other ways? You could go out to Sydney and then up to Brisbane and across, right? That's a way, isn't it? Would it be the way you take? Right, so that's why you're here now in Krishna consciousness. You want the quickest, direct way. The way that has the less risk of getting lost.
If you read words of the Buddha, words of Christ, and you see...
Buddha doesn't talk about God. Buddha says, I've come to teach two things and two things only. What is dukkha, misery, and how to become free from dukkha. He doesn't talk about the positive at all. Even when his followers would ask him, is there a God, he would just be quiet. Because he's preaching or teaching, he's doctoring to a certain class of patients. So he just brought them as far as they were able to go. They didn't want to hear about God, so he taught them about the misery of the material world and how you have to get rid of material desire. But what's beyond all that, what's the positive? He didn't talk about it. Jesus taught bhakti yoga in a very simple way. He taught love of God in a very elementary way. Who was Jesus speaking to? People in the desert, fishermen. Now, who is Krishna speaking to in Bhagavad Gita? Arjuna. Such a quality of man is not available these days. Arjuna, the Pandavas, they're far beyond the level of humanity present now. So therefore, you get a conversation of knowledge far beyond what is available now. So you take the best. In order to do your job as a doctor, don't you want the best medical knowledge you can get? So, similarly, if you want to be spiritually enlightened, you should get the best, most comprehensive knowledge available and the most accurate, thorough process.
What if several different paths will say, no, that's true?
What if?
Several different paths, several different spiritual masters will say to me, they provide the best truth.
Who is the original guru? Right. So Krishna says, Mamana Bhava Mad Bhakta. Always think of me, become my devotee. So, if someone can teach you how to always think of Krishna and become his devotee, that is good. And if you have a choice, find the best hospital facilities. What is the medical situation in Australia? You have public hospitals and private hospitals? Or it's all public? It's all... If someone's wealthy, where do they go? Private hospital. So if you had the facility, you would go to a private hospital. You want the best if you have the money. So why not pick out the best facilities for being Krishna conscious? I have no doubt that here in the city of Melbourne, this is the best facility for becoming Krishna conscious. So take advantage. Gradually increase your chanting and it'll all become clear. Haven't you given some patients some medicine, told them, take this every day, gradually the infection will go away? Yes? So we say the same thing here. But you have to take the medicine according to prescription for it to work. All right? So please think about these things. Thank you for considering these things. Yes?
Is Krishna ultimately, we see pictures of Krishna in a physical form, but ultimately...
What do you mean in a physical form?
Paintings in, I suppose Krishna in his life that he had on the 5,000 years ago. The question I wanted to ask is Krishna ultimately an energy is that energy, what the Chinese call ki and what the Indians have another word?
Prana.
Prana. Is that what Krishna is ultimately?
Prana and chi are just insignificant, subtle material energies compared to the spiritual energy. And the spiritual energy belongs to Krishna. Krishna is the master of all potencies, material and spiritual. So let us not confuse the energy with the source of all the energy. Just like when there's sunlight, you must consider that the source of the sunlight is the sun, right? So such subtle material energies like chi and prana, they are very insignificant compared to the glories of Krishna's spiritual potency. And Krishna is the source of all potencies. All right, let's look at it another way. The tendency of many spiritually inquisitive persons today is to consider that because something is a little bit more subtle than anything they've known before, it must be spiritual. So chi must be spiritual, prana must be spiritual. No, prana is material. Chi is material. It's just subtle. Just like psychic powers. They're material, but they're subtle. If you study the Vedic knowledge, you'll understand the whole purview, the whole range of yogic powers, psychic powers, and you won't be bewildered by these things. But it's just like if you don't know what the full reality is, you see something a little bit fascinating and you think, oh, wow. Just like sometimes people go to India and they meet yogis who can produce a speck of gold in their hand. And they think, ooh, you must be God. You can go to so many gold and jewelry shops and buy a handful of gold or jewels. Do you worship the proprietor as God? No, he just owns a gold shop. He owns a jewelry shop. And then you think, who is the proprietor of all the gold and all the jewels in existence? So there is that tendency that when you meet up with something that's a little bit different from what you've ever seen, you think, oh, this is the ultimate. Remember when you were a little kid and you did like that? Any little thing a little kid sees. Wow, Daddy, look at this. Amazing. And mother and father get such joy out of that, right? Yes? Oh, he does. Our little child, he doesn't know. This is. Maybe you, Srila Prabhupada, he described what it's like when he first saw a garbage truck in New York City, those mechanized trucks, where you put the garbage in the back and it, pushes it up into the, The first time you see something, there's this sense of wonder. But that doesn't mean that what you're looking at is spiritual. So you have to become more aware of the full picture of reality. And then you won't be so impressed by chi energy or prana energy. They're just matter. But they're subtle matter. Just like your body has chakras, you know that, right? It has nadis between the chakras. That's just materialism. Nothing spiritual about it at all. The energy that flows between the chakras through the nadis, it's material. It's just subtle material. Therefore, most scientists today don't know anything about it. Just like right now, this is my last day of taking some homeopathic medicine for a cough that I got in Siberia last year. So, most material scientists don't accept that homeopathy works. In fact, someone in the USA is offering $1 million prize if anyone can actually show through an experiment that everyone will accept, meaning that these doubters will accept, that homeopathy actually has a biological effect. So there's always something more subtle than what people know about it, but it doesn't mean it's spiritual. I'm not going to go around and tell you homeopathy is spiritual. No, it's just more subtle than what most scientists know about. So you understand my point, yes? Very good question. Very important question for today. Yes? Whether Krishna's form is... Krishna's form is composed of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Satchitananda. That's his form. There's no difference between Krishna and his form. So it's not that Krishna's form is energy in the sense that it's different from the energetic source. No, everything about Krishna is Krishna, the source of all energy. So it's not that there's a person, Krishna, who has a form made of a certain kind of energy. No. It's hard to understand. But if you study Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, you come here regularly, you'll understand. Okay? Yes?
Since the objective, one of the objectives is to get liberated, to free ourselves from cycle of birth and death.
Where do you go then?
That's another question. But
I'd want to know if I'm leaving one room, where I'm supposed to go to the next room.
What I'm asking is why?
When you have a wait. Let me ask you though. I like to ask some questions too. Don't mind. All right? You get to ask all the questions. Now, what kind of car do you have now?
None.
But you'll get one, right?
Yes.
Okay. Will it last forever?
No.
Okay, but what is the car you're going to get next?
I wouldn't make it my mind.
Yeah, but you're thinking, which one?
There's two ones I'm thinking.
What? Which are they?
One of them is Honda, and the second one is maybe maybe Nissan.
Huh?
Honda or Nissan?
Or Nissan. Honda or Nissan. Okay. After you, when you get that Honda or Nissan, and you give it up after a few years,
yeah,
because you'll be increasing your salary, right? What car will you get next? But when you get the Honda or Nissan, you will think, when it's time to give it up, what you're going to get next. So similarly, when we walk out of one room, we need to know what's the next room we're going to. So, if you're going to leave material existence, you should know what is your destination.
Yeah, destination is the place next to Gokuldam. They have that big chart on the upstairs. They have.
Very good. That's good.
I don't remember the name there.
Very good. You're learning.
Why are we doing that out of fear from material energy, from the what's the reason? Why should such an important goal be based upon fear of neglecting the material life? That's the question. Why should you be doing such an important goal by being afraid of any material life?
In the ultimate stages of love of Krishna, you're not serving Krishna because you're afraid of material life. Because then, at that point, your attraction, your rakti for Krishna is fully developed. And it's just Krishna is so beautiful. Why not go to Krishna? But in the beginning stages, it's good to be afraid of material existence. In fact, an intelligent person is afraid. Material existence is temporary. It bewilders you. It frustrates you. Just like you have it all planned, and in the future, your salary will increase, right? You're working for someone else?
No, at the moment.
Own business?
No.
Nothing? But still, in the future, your salary will increase, right? It could easily go the other way. But you're hoping, right? But the material world doesn't satisfy everyone's hopes. So therefore, there should be fear. That maybe my plans will be frustrated. That's intelligent. And then as your attraction for Krishna increases, you'll become overwhelmed by Krishna's beauty. Lavanya sarama samudram ananya siddham. That's a higher stage. Okay? So it's very intelligent at first to have fear of the material energy. Not that you think living in this material world, in this material energy, means my desires will be fulfilled. I want a higher salary. I want a beautiful wife who does whatever I say. I want children who do exactly what I say. And my house will get bigger and bigger, and the suburbs I live in will be better and better. Is this world a place that automatically fulfills such desires? No. Therefore, you should be fearful. And then while you're hoping for those kind of things, your own body is breaking down, as the doctor can tell you. Yes, you've seen so many people come to the emergency room who had so many dreams, right? You see it every day, don't you? Anything else? Yes.
What is the height of the Krishna and the Gopi?
What is
the height? How tall are they? How tall are they?
You cannot measure Krishna. He's aprameya, immeasurable. But to facilitate your loving attraction, he comes as a normal height for human beings. But actually, you can't measure him. Didn't Mother Yashoda find that out? She tried to get the rope around Krishna. It seemed to be an obvious, no problem situation.
I'm just thinking how this world will look like.
You're going to take a measuring stick to the spiritual world. First, you should understand he's immeasurable.
I just want to know, like, in Dwaraka, when Krishna was there, how tall was he?
He was human-like, but not a human being. How tall is Sri Radha Vallabha? Huh? How do you know?
The lake is very small.
Huh?
The lake is very small. Generally, how when it comes for the incarnation, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda, how tall?
I already explained. Human like.
Human, 6 feet.
What do you want to do? You want to sew for the deities? If you want to sew for the deities, then you have to.
Like, I'm just curious.
Yeah.
It's not seriously, I just want to know.
Nadavapu, human like form. Okay? Yes?
When we go out, like after this session, how we should like relate Krishna in everything, or speculation, like how we should distinguish between these two things? Because when we try to relate to Krishna, we might end up in speculations and we don't get the proper results.
That's why we study Bhagavad Gita. And then when you drink water, what do you say? Krishna's the taste of water. That's not speculation, because Krishna told you to see him in that way.
But like you, in the first session, you give an example of a driver who just go and see that, just like when you go outside a temple, I just do the paid obeisance and
yes.
I'm religious. So how you can say like, person is relating Krishna in day-to-day life, but he's not doing the Krishna conscious activities.
You should do Krishna conscious activities. You're chanting Hare Krishna? How much do you chant?
16.
Very good. You're following the bhakti practices? All right, so? Now increase your intensity and teach others also.
Like if a person is like too goodness and passion, wants to do pious activities, but a person is not intent to do Krishna conscious activities, what's the destination, how we can relate a person?
In this age of Kali, if you try to perform punya, pious activities, your results will be frustrated, because the nature of this age of Kali is that there's sinful contamination everywhere. You will not be successful. Therefore, it's best to jump over the problem and chant Hare Krishna. You may think you're pious, but what does Yamaraj think? That you have to take into account. By your own measure, you may think, I am so pious, I'm doing good for everyone. But Yamaraj has a different measuring stick that we should be afraid of. It's not recommended that you follow the path of punya or pious activity in this day and age. You know, in Krishna book, there's the Leela with Maharaj Nirga. But what does Yamaraj think? That That you have to take into account. By your own measure, you may think, I am so pious, I'm doing good for everyone. But Yamaraj has a different measuring stick that we should be afraid of. It's not recommended that you follow the path of punya or pious activity in this day and age. You know, in Krishna book, there's the Leela with Maharaj Nirga. He gave countless cows in charity to the Brahmanas. Countless. But he made one slight mistake. What was that? He gave in charity to a Brahmana. Out of countless cows, one of the cows he gave to a Brahmana before that. And just for that, he had to suffer. For taking the property of a Brahmana. This is how strict the path of punya is. Now, do you think in this Kali Yuga someone could actually follow that path of what is punya, avoiding all sinful activities, avoiding being implicated in sinful activities by indirect association? No. So therefore you should concentrate on chanting Hare Krishna and teach others to do the same. Be able to explain to them that without chanting Hare Krishna, they have no protection against the dangers of Kali Yuga. Okay. Yes?
Maharaj, like in the stories, Krishna's stories, like in Vrindavan, he's always shown as playing the cows and playing with his friends. But in this case, like, we are so much under stress, like getting up early in the morning, go to the office, please the boss, and then again go to the go home, and then please wife and kids. I mean, so much of stress involved in that. So, like, how to overcome that?
Get up in the morning, chant Hare Krishna. Come home in the evening, have a little cure time with your family, take prasad. Don't turn on the TV. Haven't you heard others say this to you? Chanting 16 rounds, we have no time. The Swamiji's don't understand, we're working hard all day. We have no time for chanting. And you ask, well, how much do you watch television? Well, only 2 hours a night. In 2 hours, you could chant 16 rounds. If we're going to be honest, the main killer of spiritual life in the home is the television. First you say, I'm just going to watch the news, right? You've all experienced this, right? I'll simply watch the news. The rest is just rubbish. And then, wait a minute, looks like something good's coming on tonight. For tonight only, I'll watch this program. And then soon you're watching every night. So I'm not going to even discuss the content of what you're watching. I'm discussing the time point of view. It takes up time before you know it. 2 hours has gone by, right? Is that so? And then everyone says, no time to chant. You don't understand. We are working people. We have our families. So I've given you some hints. Anything else? Yes.
Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that I'm the underlying thread on which all the living beings are linked as the pearls on the thread.
Sutre Mani Ganaiva.
So I want to know that what is the difference being in the spiritual world or being in the material world, or being with Krishna or away from Krishna, or be a devotee or be a non-devotee, or be divine or demigod. So what will it be?
All the energy comes from Krishna, but you're not supposed to be situated in Krishna's material energy. He doesn't want you there. The prison is also the creation of the government, but the government doesn't want you in prison. They want you to be a law-abiding citizen. So it all comes from the government, all the facilities, to live in the suburbs or live in the prison. But you should not be situated in the prison. Similarly, you should not be situated in the prison house of the material energy, even though it belongs to Krishna. He doesn't want you there. Okay? Yes.
We have made some cookies for you to
eat. All right. How are we going to do this?
We'll have a kirtan.
During the kirtan? All right. Okay. We have some cookie prasad to distribute. So we're going to have a closing kirtan. And during the kirtan, if you like a cookie, you may come and get. We're doing prasad distribution. All right? Nityananda Priya, he and his assistants have put so much energy into organizing this seminar. So he has an announcement to make.
We would like to thank our temple management headed by His Grace Aniruddha Prabhu.
Haribol! Haribol!